Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We're reading from Volume 62, Number 1, the Fall 2022 issue, History Rocks, Music in North Carolina. And we'll read first from The Human Imagination is the Muscle of the Arts, an interview with Anthony Kelly, composer in residence with the North Carolina Symphony, by Jason Spencer, who is Director of Education for the North Carolina Symphony. He oversees the planning and administration of more than 120 virtual and in-person education programs across the state each year, reaching more than 100,000 students. The North Carolina Symphony has been making music for almost 100 years. It's a vital part of North Carolina's cultural life. Each year, the symphony carries the gift of music to people in all 100 North Carolina counties, in communities large and small. One special feature is our education concert, designed just for kids. The 2021-2022 season marked the beginning of our partnership with composer Anthony Kelly, a professor of the practice of music at Duke University. Kelly composed a new work that premiered, had its first public performance, in June 2022, at Cary's Coca Booth Amphitheater as part of its Juneteenth celebration. In addition, Kelly's work Cross Currents appeared in this year's classical series, and his Themes and Fanfares of Unity was included in the education concert. Kelly has also participated in lectures, classroom visits, and other education activities connecting the people of North Carolina with the symphony. Jason Spencer, please introduce yourself, who you are, and what you do. Anthony Kelly. I'm Anthony Kelly, and I'm a composer. And I am the composer in residence with the North Carolina Symphony, I'm glad to say. I also teach musical composition and theory and some African American music at Duke University. Spencer, what does a composer do? Kelly. A composer creates music that people have not heard before. And sometimes a composer will rearrange music that we have heard before, but in ways we have not heard it before. And sometimes we ourselves create our own music on whatever instrument we play. In my case, sometimes it's piano, sometimes it's trombone, sometimes it's tuba. Spencer, what kind of music do you compose? Kelly. It's been a lot of different kinds of music. And when one asks what kind of music, it's a question of what style. It's a question of, maybe, what historic period we might have been influenced by. My music I have often called New Blues, because it is derived from more folkloric sounds and music than might be connected to blues. But I feel that sometimes what I do is distinctive from blues. That is the new part, because it folds in some traditions that sometimes blues might not account for so readily. For instance, I love symphonic music. I love the Hungarian composer Béla Bartók. I love music by Franz Liszt. I love Igor Stravinsky. I love Thelonious Monk. I love Duke Ellington. So all that music is rolling around in my head. And then add George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. And add everything you can imagine that most everybody likes from the radio. And all of that is stewing around in my head. And then, when I write music, I try to have it summarize how I process all of those different sounds. And that's why it's got a folksy sort of music that you would want to express on a porch with your friends. But sometimes it's performed by groups like symphony orchestras. An orchestra is a large group of musicians who play together on a variety of instruments, including string, such as violins, cellos, and harps, wind, such as flutes, clarinets, trombones, and percussion, such as kettle drums, cymbals, and maracas. So it's performed by groups like symphony orchestras or chamber ensembles or a solo pianist. So new blues is what I like to call it. Spencer, you wrote a piece to commemorate Juneteenth that premiered in June 2022. It will also be part of our education concert next year. What was your inspiration for that? Kelly, when the symphony and I started talking, they said they were interested in a piece about Juneteenth. At the time, I was starting to write what I'm calling spirituals of liberation. I call them spirituals because they refer to Negro spirituals, the early songs that were written and sung by enslaved people that have actually survived to this day, like Go Down Moses and Swing Low Sweet Chariot. And I was writing some songs that I considered new spirituals, with a little more of a contemporary sort of edge to it. I call them spirituals of liberation because we were in the thick of the COVID-19 pandemic when we were having some of these conversations, and I was trying to envision a day where we would be a little more free to go our way. So I was going to celebrate liberation, not only from slavery and from oppression, but liberation from lockdown as well. He chuckles. Spencer, what is your favorite part of being a composer? Kelly, one of my favorite parts is the miracle of translation. That means I have ideas, I write them down, they're all living in my head, and they sound a really specific way. And a conductor, who's the person who conducts or guides the members of the orchestra in their performance, gets her hands on the score, which is a printed copy of a musical composition. A conductor uses this to conduct or lead the orchestra in a performance. And the conductor looks through it and decides what she's going to emphasize in a rehearsal. And the orchestra, individually, each player decides what they're going to emphasize. So it's a whole lot of factors where things could really change between what was living up in his head and what sounds in the room. The miracle of the translation is that most of it, when you've really done your job, sounds very close to that original imagination. But very often, the surprises are in what human beings bring from their own experience. And those surprises, they never bother me or offend me. They're just always like, ooh, you know, I hadn't really imagined that that would come out that way, or, there's a new angle to that blueprint that I laid out. And I'm okay with the little variance, because everybody's supposed to bring a bit of themselves to it. I love the idea that everybody, including me, will have surprises when we get in the concert hall. How did your arts education influence your decision to be a composer? Kelly, I started on piano, and my mom was a little hesitant to just buy a piano. They were expensive. So she said, make an agreement with the custodian at the elementary school that you can practice until he's finished doing his work for the day, and then you can leave. So that's how I began to practice. And I really valued being in that Pinkston Street Elementary School auditorium for those hours after everybody had left. It was just me and the piano and Mr. Steve, and he let me do my thing. When he was done, he kicked me out and we locked up the building. That's how I practiced all through my childhood. There was a program at Henderson Junior High School that featured the Vance Senior High School Concert Band. It was a full assembly in the auditorium. They played an arrangement of the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And I remember that day as if it were 5 seconds ago. I remember sitting there thinking, whatever that is, I want to do that the rest of my life. One of my Henderson friends and mentors, Mrs. Therrington was her name, said, I bought some symphony tickets for you and my nephew, and I want to take you to Raleigh to hear the symphony. We were in junior high, so we were like, whatever, let's do it. So she takes us in the car from Henderson to Raleigh, and they play with Billy Taylor, the great jazz pianist who was featured. I think I still literally have the ticket stub from that concert. Spencer, how has life in North Carolina influenced your compositions? Kelly, in a lot of ways. Having a place that's comfortably suburban or rustic when I want it to be. I spent a lot of time down in Candor, North Carolina, in Montgomery County. And there's tobacco farms, peach farms, and not much else out there except those fields. And those are some of my summers. I remember that being part of life growing up, of that organic nature of walking through the woods, observing the wildlife around us. One of my mentors, Allie Wilson at Berkeley, said, "Music is human experience transformed." So it's like there's no separation in my head. The way that a tree grows on the side of the highway has a form that's going to inform how I'm going to shape a composition. It sounds a little abstract, but I honestly believe that to be true. Spencer, how do we prepare students for success in the arts? Kelly, I have a philosophy about that. If you ask how would we prepare a group of students for success as a soccer or basketball or a football team, everyone would say the physical conditioning is going to be really important, right? You've got to really train them. But some of that physical aspect, the muscle of it, is important with athletics. And the human imagination is the muscle of the arts. You can't just jump into the imagination and jump out of it. It has to constantly be worked, just like the muscle of an athlete. Being able to imagine just prepares you for life. It prepares you for how to improvise when you need to improvise. Prepares you for how to communicate when you need to communicate. Prepares you for how to emphasize when someone's not in the situation that you're normally in. So the answer is, we condition the imagination of our young people. And that's the way. Spencer, is there anything you'd like to share with the students of North Carolina? Kelly, that I'm still a student of North Carolina. As I grew up from being a young student into a student who got to explore the world is, yes, enjoy the perks of being in this wonderful state. It's a wonderful place to be a student. At the same time, prepare yourself to explore beyond so that you can really appreciate it if you ever come back. Be open to all experiences, whether they are in North Carolina, in other states, or in other countries. Keep at your core the things that are the most valuable aspects of being North Carolinians. Here's something for all of us to think about. The state motto is esse quam videri, to be rather than to seem. So don't go out as a poser. And you don't have to do a whole lot of trying to impress people. Just be. Be rooted. And immerse yourself into things sincerely. And then participate in a society and do the best around you. This interview was shortened and edited slightly for the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine. To see the full video interview, visit YouTube/capital X, lowercase O, uppercase F, uppercase Z, 8, uppercase M, 5, uppercase O, lowercase H, uppercase T, 4. Here are the captions that accompany the photographs of this article. David Glover conducts the 2022 Education Concert on January 25th. Cellists and bassists performing at the same concert. Musicians performed wearing masks because of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Composer Anthony Kelly, a self-portrait taken in Detroit, Michigan. 15-year-old Anthony Kelly playing the piano. Anthony Kelly recently posted about these January 1980 ticket stubs on Instagram, one of the most important landmarks of my listening life, attending a concert of Dr. Billy Taylor performing with the North Carolina Symphony in 1980. I remember this concert as vividly as it would feel playing live before me tonight. Taylor's own composition, C.A.G., was delivered with such lucidity and elegance that it convinced me to pursue a lifetime of musical connections and fusions. It's a North Carolina tradition, students enjoying an education concert circa 1950s. Students from Fox Road Elementary playing Glockenspiel at the education concert February 2022. Anthony Kelly, composer in residence with the North Carolina Symphony. There's an insert article, The North Carolina Symphony Plays On. Did you get to see the North Carolina Symphony perform with your class when you were in the 4th, 5th, or 6th grade? If your parents or grandparents grew up in North Carolina, ask them if they participated in a symphony school program. It's been a North Carolina tradition for generations. The symphony began in Chapel Hill in 1932 as a work relief project as part of President Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal. In 1943, it became the first state-supported symphony in the nation when the General Assembly passed what became nicknamed as the Horn Tutor Bill. The North Carolina Symphony's mission has always been to be the people's symphony and to take its music to everyone. Each year, more than 300 concerts, education programs, and community engagement offerings reach adults and school children in all 100 North Carolina counties, in communities large and small, in concert halls, auditoriums, and gymnasiums, even in restaurants, clubs, and outdoor settings. Today, the symphony also reaches out to audiences around the globe through concerts and educational offerings available online. The symphony leads one of the most extensive education programs of any symphony orchestra in the country, serving more than 100,000 students each year. The symphony provides training and resources for teachers, sends small ensembles into classrooms, and presents full orchestra in-person and online education concerts that bring the fundamentals of music to life. You can learn more at NorthCarolinaSymphony.org, that's ncsymphony.org/education. Next, the North Carolina Musician Murals Project. In 2007, artist Scott Nurkin began doing portraits to earn pizza for life. He created 23 paintings of famous North Carolina musicians to hang in Pepper's Pizza on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. The portraits were hung on a wall with a mural of the state showing where each musician was born. He says, I wanted to remind people that North Carolina has produced some of the greatest musical trailblazers the world has ever known. When Pepper's closed in 2013, the portraits were purchased by the UNC Chapel Hill Department of Music, where they hang today. But then Nurkin had an idea. Why not repaint the portraits as murals in each musician's hometown? His first mural was jazz legend John Coltrane, who was born in Hamlet. That first effort has grown into the North Carolina Musician Murals Project, more than 10 murals and counting. Today you can find these huge, hard-to-miss portraits of our state's musical greats all across the state. Here are just a few. Is one near you? To learn more, visit musicianmuralsproject.com. Nina Simone. Born 1933, died 2003, Polk County. Eunice Kathleen Wayman grew up in Tryon, dreaming of becoming a concert pianist. With support, she eventually studied at the Juilliard School of Music in New York. She first changed her name to Nina Simone to hide from family back home that she had begun performing in nightclubs. But soon, that name was famous around the world. Her music ranged from classical, jazz, and gospel to protest songs inspired by the civil rights movement. Her song, To Be Young, Gifted, and Black, became an inspirational anthem for many. Roberta Flack, born 1937, Buncombe County. Singer Roberta Flack was born in Black Mountain and learned piano at an early age. Her first hit single, The First Time I Saw Your Face, the first time ever I saw your face in 1972 was featured in the movie Play Misty for Me and won a Grammy as Song of the Year. In 1973, her recording Killing Me Softly with his song won 3 more Grammys for Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best Pop Vocal by a Female. John Coltrane, born 1926, died 1967, Richmond County. John Coltrane was a groundbreaking jazz saxophonist. He was born in Hamlet, but grew up in High Point. Through the late 1940s into the 1950s, he played with bebop musicians Dizzy Gillespie and Thelonious Monk, as well as Miles Davis. His legendary style was often dark and brooding, but he was also known for his willingness to help and nurture young musicians. Many of his recordings, including A Love Supreme and Giant Steps, have become jazz classics. Randy Travis, born 1959, Union County. Singer Randy Travis, born Randy Trawick in Marshville, has enjoyed a long, successful career in country music. He began performing in a Charlotte nightclub before moving on to Nashville. Travis developed his own style, mixing his country roots with a more modern sound. He has won many awards for his hit songs, including Forever and Ever, Amen. He also won Grammys for Always and Forever in 1988, Old 8x10 in 1989, and Rise and Shine in 2004. Don Gibson, born 1928, died 2003, Cleveland County. Don Gibson was a country musician and songwriter from Shelby. He was nicknamed the Sad Poet because he wrote so many tearjerkers about loneliness and lost love. But people loved them. Gibson wrote dozens of hits, including Oh Lonesome Me and I Can't Stop Loving You, which has been recorded by more than 700 artists, including Ray Charles. Here are some stories from our collection. A Microphone, circa 1944 to 1964. Imagine life before the invention of television, computers, and the internet. Back then, North Carolinians relied on radio as an important source of news and entertainment, including music. This microphone was initially used by disc jockeys, radio hosts, or presenters at WPTF, the state's oldest radio station, located in Raleigh in Wake County. It was a high-quality microphone that could be spoken into from both sides. Pianoforte, circa 1830s. The pianoforte, or forte piano, was an early piano of the mid-1700s to early 1900s that composers such as Mozart and Beethoven wrote music for. This pianoforte was built in the 1830s by Wesley Whitaker, born 1788, died 1861, a Raleigh piano maker, and is one of the few signed North Carolina pieces in existence. It now stands in the North Carolina Executive Mansion in Raleigh, in a room originally known as the Ladies' Parlor. Din Guang, date unknown. During the Vietnam War, the U.S. government recruited many Montagnards, French for mountain people, of the central Vietnamese highlands to join the United States Army Special Forces as soldiers. When the United States left Vietnam, humanitarian groups helped many refugees settle here in North Carolina. Today, Guilford County has the largest Montagnard community outside Southeast Asia. This Din Guang is a traditional Montagnard stringed instrument handmade of a gourd and bamboo. Dulcimer, circa 1760 to 1850. This dulcimer is a rare example of a musical instrument carried by German immigrants traveling from Pennsylvania into the North Carolina backcountry by way of the Great Wagon Road. This kind of instrument continued to be used and made in the western Piedmont until the late 1800s. Bass horn, a bass horn, and songbook. circa 1860 to 1861. Do you take your music with you wherever you go? Throughout history, when soldiers went off to war, they took their music with them too, often in the form of military bands. This horn and songbook were used by Oliver J. Lehman of Bethania, Forsyth County. He organized and taught the 33rd Regiment Band at Kinston after the Battle of New Bern on March 14, 1862. Every night, if the weather was good, the band played for the other soldiers for 1 hour. American Idol Clothing, 2003. Many North Carolinians have sung their way to top spots on American Idol, including Fantasia Barrino, Chris Daughtry, Kelly Pickler, Scotty McCreery, and Anoop Desai. In 2003, Raleigh native Clay Aiken made it to second place. He wore this outfit when he performed I Can't Help Myself. Aiken's first album, Measure of a Man, went multi-platinum and included the hit single Invisible. Since then, Aiken has also become active in politics, UNICEF, LGBTQIA plus rights, and in supporting children with disabilities. Now a closer look at more North Carolinian musicians. Tift Merritt, born 1975, Wake County. Country singer-songwriter Tift Merritt moved to Raleigh from Houston, Texas at an early age. Merritt got her start playing in Triangle area clubs and appeared with bands like the $2 Pistols, with whom she recorded an EP of classic country songs in 1999. She won the Chris Austin Songwriting Contest at Merlefest in 2000. Her recordings include Bramble Rose, 2002, Grammy-nominated Tambourine, 2004, Another Country, 2008, and the live albums Home is Loud, 2005, and Love Soldiers On, concert at the historic Playmakers Theater, recorded in Chapel Hill on January 10th to 11th, 2017, released 2020. Ronnie Millsap, born 1943 in Graham County. Country singer Ronnie Millsap, born in Robbinsville, rose to stardom in the 1970s. Blind since birth, he attended the Governor Moorhead School for the Blind in Raleigh, where his musical talents were discovered. In the 1960s, Millsap worked as a session musician in Memphis, Tennessee, playing piano on Elvis Presley's hit Kentucky Rain. He recorded his first solo album, Ronnie Millsap, in 1971. Beginning in 1973, he had a string of consecutive number one hits, including Pure Love and the Grammy-winning Please Don't Tell Me How the Story Ends. In 2004, he won a Grammy for his album, Just for Thrills. We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.
Soft as a woman, strong as a man, throws your head back in a full mouth lane. It's like knowing you can sleep at night.